Well, here we are.
All right, people, we're gonna try something a little different today.
No, I do mind. The dude minds. This will not stand.
The only true wisdom is in knowing you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
I cannot solve your problem, sir. Only you can.
Don't mess with the bull, young man. You'll get the horns.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
I'm gonna tell you something, and I want you to listen tight. It may sound like I'm talking about me, but I'm not. I'm talking about you. As a matter of fact, I'm talking about all people everywhere.
Discussing the issues that actually matter. Finding the answers using logic and reason. Now here is the host of Rush to Reason, John Rush.
Filling in is Andy Pate, party of choice.
And I'm your host, Andy Pate, filling in for John Rush. And we are getting ready for Kurt Rogers and the Monday Mortgage Minute. Kurt appears to be a little bit delayed. So first, I'm going to talk about something else, which is Joe Manchin. And you probably woke up this morning and you were thinking, my hero in life is Joe Manchin. You weren't? You should have been. Why? Because Joe Manchin is making things very difficult for Joe Biden. And I was saying this when Joe Biden was elected, I was basically asking a lot of people, you know, when we would have our interviews on here, is Joe Manchin going to be the only roadblock to this man simply overrunning America? And it appears he is. Joe Manchin has basically come out and said he is against DC statehood. He is against ending the filibuster. He is against basically all the power grabs that they're doing right now in Washington. And he has come out again now and basically said, I know I keep saying this, but the reason I say basically, folks, is because you never know, right? Is he suddenly going to fall back and flip-flop, or is he going to stay with us? So far, Joe Manchin is making it so that we are not being overrun. And I think we've got to go ahead and call his office and say thanks, because he's the only roadblock to their agenda. And now, somebody who will not be a roadblock to your agenda is now on the line, Kurt Rogers with Affordable Interest Mortgage. Kurt, Monday Mortgage.
How are you?
Doing well, sir.
Can you hear?
You cut out for just a moment. What? Are you there now?
Yeah, I did. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
That's okay. I cut out all the time. Kurt, how are you doing this week?
I am doing just fine. Just staying busy, you know.
I bet you are. Now, did the rates, I know they dropped a little bit a couple weeks ago. Have they eked back up? Where are they looking?
Well, actually, the rates, they were down low in January. They eked up a little bit in February and March, and now they're starting to sneak back down. The lenders are coming up back with some pricing incentives. So it's driving the refinance market back again.
Okay, what do you mean by price?
Get down around that 2.5. People like it.
Which is awesome. But what do you mean by pricing incentives? Because I wasn't really seeing anything in the market or in the economy that would drive them a little bit lower. I was a little surprised they dipped.
Well, there's people, investors out there that want to invest in jumbo loans. So what they do is, because there's so many people that have jumbo loans, and that's a loan over 596, 850. And because of that, they're putting incentives. They're giving like a rebate. They're giving you 0.3 off in the cost. So that helps to lower the rate and makes it much more affordable to refinance and lower your payment.
Okay.
So they'll do that when they want, when there's people out there, like investors or jumbo loans, things like that.
Okay. So you're talking, I just want to make sure I'm getting the numbers right. You're talking around 600,000?
Or 600,000 and above, up to 2.5 million.
Okay. All right. Does that make it advantageous? And once again, I'm speaking as someone who doesn't do your job, so pardon me for a dumb question.
Okay.
But does that make it advantageous to buy a little more expensive house and get up into that range?
It helps you to qualify more. When you're able to have an eighth of a point or a quarter of a point lower rate, you're talking $50 to $80 a month in a payment. And that gets pretty substantial on a jumbo loan and allows you to qualify or save more money. So, yeah, little things like that make a big difference in jumbo loans. Eighth of a point or a quarter of a point on a $200,000 loan is not going to move the payment much. But on a $900,000 loan, it does.
Okay. Now, I know that you can't know the future for sure, but do you see the rates staying this low much longer? I kind of wonder if they're going to go back up to that February, March level.
I see the rates pretty much staying where they're at like this through the summer. I think they'll move back up around the 3%. And they might go up as much as 3.25% by the end of the year. But when you put that into perspective of where rates have been, just because you're not getting 2.5%, 3.25% is still a very good rate and a good opportunity. So I don't think the rates being at 3 to 3.25% in the fall and in the winter are going to slow anything down.
Okay.
It's still pretty cheap money.
Oh, yeah. I think it's very cheap money. I'll bet people are they mainly coming to you for refis, or are people really looking to buy? Because right now it's so hard to buy. There's not enough homes out there. And it just seems like refinancing is the way to go.
Well, actually, because of the rates where they are, that's one of the things that's driving the market. Because like we just talked about, even on a $300,000 home, when the rates are 1/4 point or 0.5 point, that could be $50 a month, and that's determining whether you can qualify or not qualify. You know, that gets you into a $400,000, $500,000, or $600,000 house a lot cheaper, and your ratios work out better. So, yeah, because of the rates, that's what's still driving the market, especially for first-time home buyers. Because a first-time home buyer, you know, they only have to put 3 to 5% down and then get these great rates.
That's right. Are they at a real advantage right now with the first-time home buyers, and there are a lot of them? If you're not one of them, are you just in a hard way right now grabbing that house?
Actually, the first-time home buyer has it a little bit tougher.
Okay.
The folks with more cash down can outbid those that are doing first-time home buys, and that makes it tougher on them to be able to do it.
Okay, well, good point. All right, let's say that you're looking for a house right now, and you know you're dealing with the fact that you're going to be bidding with 5 to 10 other people on almost any good house. What do you do with Kurt Rogers at Affordable Interest Mortgage to prep this in advance?
Well, we'd like everybody to come to us, but if you're going to go out to try to buy a house, first thing you need to do is have a realtor that has experience, because if they're not experienced, then getting into the bidding war is going to be very difficult. If you have an experienced realtor, they're going to help. The second thing, and there's not a realtor that I work with that doesn't demand a pre-approval. And a pre-approval isn't just saying, here are my documents, am I approved? You have to send that off to the lender to get it approved, because the selling agents are demanding that an underwriter has already looked at your documentation and knows that you're already approved, that we're not trying to get you approved, and it looks like you qualify. And there's a lot of those type pre-approvals out there. Selling agents aren't going for those. So you need to make sure you're ahead of the game. So if you're thinking of buying in 60 to 90 days, you need to get out there now, get it submitted, get it approved, because that's good for 120 days for you.
Okay, Kurt. Well, you say that they can call anyone. I think they need to call you. So, Kurt, how do they get a hold of Kurt Rogers at Affordable Interest Mortgage?
720-895-0500, or then go to our website at aimortgage.net.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. And one moment here, folks. One moment. Sorry. What's up next? Okay. Folks, that was Affordable Interest Mortgage with Kurt Rogers. Sorry about that. We had a little bit of a computer issue here. Once again, take some of that equity in your house, turn it into cash. Kurt can often do it without increasing the cash flow you're paying out. And by the way, that's a big thing you always worry about. Let Kurt help you get out of that. Just call Kurt Rogers at 720-895-0500 or go to aimortgage.net. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you.
Can you believe how low rates are staying? Still in the twos. Back in the 40s and the 50s, rates were in the 5 to 6% range. How much longer are you going to wait? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Your home has never been worth more. Take AIM to get that lower rate or shorten your term. Lower your payment and pay thousands less in interest. It's your money. Call 720-895-0500 now. Affordable Interest Mortgage. Locally owned and family operated since 2001. Are you ready for the future financially? Many of our clients have the ability to access their equity for 30 years without raising their payments now. This prepares them for those speed bumps of life. Ask how you can become mortgage safe too. Take AIM, 720-895-0500, where a reputation of putting you first and listening to you is unmatched in Colorado. Call 720-895-0500 now so you can focus on what's important, family. Regulated by DOR, NMLS 298-191, Equal Credit Lender.
Find more guns and ammo at lower prices, only at Franktown Firearms. Everyone says they value long-term relationships with their customers, but the team at Franktown Firearms back up their words with actions by keeping their prices fair and their shelves as full as possible. Because they maintain good relationships with their suppliers, the team at Franktown Firearms has developed a reputation for reliability, which allows them to keep their shelves stocked during nationwide shortages. Because they always have new shipments coming in, they haven't had to hike up prices, so you can find guns and ammo at or below MSRP. You will go back again and again to a shooting range and gun store where you feel respected, and the team at Franktown Firearms shows respect through reasonable prices and a consistent supply of guns and ammo. Fill out their contact form at klzradio.com/Franktown for specific pricing. Franktown Firearms, where students become friends.
This is Rush to Reason on KLZ 560.
And welcome back to Rush to Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Andy Pate sitting in for John Rush. And on the line right now, we have a crusader for the Constitution, Alan Dershowitz. Alan, how are you today?
I'm doing great, but I don't like the term crusader. I'm Jewish. I don't do it for Christ. I do it for the Constitution. Hey,
Alan, are you saying you don't wear a cape?
Well, you know, that's interesting. Cape crusader. Yeah, that's true. There's a secular meaning. I'll take the secular meaning. I am a advocate of the United States Constitution.
One second. Is he cutting out?
Applies to everybody. I believe the Constitution applies to everybody.
Well, I agree. And by the way, Alan, you know, a lot of people, there was a lot made of you basically switching sides and, you know, people saying, hey, he was a Democrat. Now he's defending all these Republicans. I want you to know, I don't see it as you switching sides. I see it as one party kind of drifting away from you. Am I seeing it wrong?
Well, first of all, I defend people from all parties and all
sides.
Yes, you
do.
I'm a defense lawyer, and I voted for Joe Biden. I voted for Barack Obama. I now regret my second vote for Barack Obama. I think I don't regret my first vote, but I regret my second vote. I voted for Biden. I voted for Hillary Clinton. And I'll continue to defend Rudy Giuliani. I didn't vote for him. And others who are victims of constitutional violations. No, I haven't changed my views at all. I'm not yet going to say what Ronald Reagan said when he said, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me. I could leave the Democratic Party if they move further to the left. I've never been a leftist. I've always been a centrist civil libertarian. I hate radicals on the left. I think they are the most censorial people. They're not progressives. They're regressives. That's why I wrote two recent books, one, The Case Against the New Censorship, and the other, Cancel Culture, both of which attack mostly the hard left for doing what the hard right did when I was growing up, and there was McCarthyism. Today, the situation has changed.
Well, you know, and that brings up what I wanted to ask you about. And I'm sorry, I do want to get to Giuliani here in a minute, but first, I really wanted to ask about the case against the new censorship. What do you mean about the new censorship?
Well, that's the key point. You know, for 50 years, I've been fighting the old censorship. When the government tries to censor, I argued my first case in the Supreme Court in 1969 when I was a kid, when the government tried to censor a movie called I Am Curious Yellow. And then my second Supreme Court case was on behalf of Hair when they tried to censor the play Hair. And then the Pentagon Papers and WikiLeaks. And I always win when I fight the government. They're easy because the First Amendment prohibits the government from abridging freedom of speech. The new censorship is coming from private parties, from big tech, from people who themselves have First Amendment rights. It's much, much harder to fight against that form of censorship. That's why I call it the new censorship and why I wrote a book about it.
Alan, what do you think about big tech's ability to censor. And here's what I mean. I always used to think of the big three that dominated public thought, you know, public, you know, education, academia, the media, and the entertainment industry. Right. But now a fourth one has risen up, and it's big tech. And they're literally deciding who can post what on their pages and where. Now, they are private entities, but they have various protections. Where do you draw the line?
Well, I'll give you an example. I recently debated Bobby Kennedy, the son of the former attorney general. He's an environmental lawyer, but he is critical of vaccines. I'm very supportive of vaccination. I go with the science. We had a terrific debate. It lasted an hour. Thousands of people watched it, and then YouTube took it down. They said, we don't want anybody to see Bobby Kennedy's side of the debate because we don't want anybody to have any debate, any doubts about vaccination. And they basically said, Dershowitz wins the debate. You can see his side of the debate. You can't see the other side. I don't want to win by default. I want to win because my arguments are better. And I don't think that YouTube should have the authority to decide what people see and hear and read and listen to. Now, they have the benefits of Section 230 of the Decency and Communication Act, which means, unlike the New York Times, unlike the station that's carrying our discussion now, they can't be sued because they're supposed to just be a platform. But they're no longer a platform. If they're telling their viewers and listeners and others that they can't hear Bobby Kennedy talk about vaccines, then they're engaged in publication. They're like the New York Times, and they should be subject to being sued. So in my book, The Case Against the New Censors, I have a section on how to change Section 230. Basically, I would have everybody check a box. You either are a platform, in which case you can't censor and you get the benefit of the protection of 230, or you're a publisher, in which case you can censor whatever you want, but you don't get the protection of 230. That seems like a pretty easy solution. Now, there are others who have called for more radical solutions. Justice Thomas has said, look, these platforms are really common carriers. They're like the telegraph company. And the telegraph company couldn't say, we only will send telegraphs on behalf of Republicans and not Democrats, or Democrats and not Republicans. They are essentially a quasi-public utility. And so he's called for the big tech to be treated that way. I'm worried a little bit about that. I think it gives the government a little too much power over private corporations. But there's a lot we can do. And in my book, The Case of the New Censorship, I go through all of the various options we have in fighting against this, consistent with the First Amendment.
No, I totally agree. I mean, if they are editing, then they are acting as a publisher. I mean, that's what they're doing. And right now, they're able to edit and decide what goes and what doesn't go on these platforms. Well, that means it's not a platform, Alan. And I agree with you. By the way, I like your idea better. And I would tell the judge this if he were here, too. I'm not just saying that because you're here. I like being able to check it off and just say, I am this. That means these rules apply to me, or I am that. And those rules apply to me. That seems perfectly fair.
Right. Hey, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to get too far away from Giuliani here. Can you explain basically what happened to him and explain the difference between a search warrant and a subpoena?
I think the best way of explaining that is to imagine, to have all your listeners imagine, they had a deep, dark secret, some family crisis that was going on. They only trusted their priest. And so they went to their priest or their rabbi or their minister or their psychiatrist or their cardiologist, and they shared with them this deep, dark secret. And then suddenly the United States government had a search warrant and went after everything in possession of the priest, everything in possession of the lawyer, everything in possession of the doctor, and it included all this secret material. And then the government just peruses it and goes through it, sets up a ting team to say, well, this we can use, this we can't use, but they read everything. A subpoena is completely different. A subpoena is a letter, basically, that says, we would like to get this piece of email. We would like to get this cell phone, this computer. They don't take it. They just send you a letter, basically, saying, we want you to produce it. And then your lawyer goes to court and says, I can give you this cell phone because that's just my private stuff with my kids and my family. I can't give you this cell phone because it has on it communications with my clients or with my patients or things of that kind. And then the judge decides. But a subpoena is part of the adversary system. Both sides are represented, whereas a search warrant is ex parte. It's one side. The prosecution says, we want it. And the judge says, you can have it. And they go at 6 in the morning, sometimes 2 in the morning. Sometimes they break the door down without a knock. Sometimes they knock at 6 in the morning, as they did with Rudy Giuliani. But that's not the way to go when you have a lawyer or a doctor or a psychiatrist or a priest. You should go by way of subpoena unless you have evidence that the person getting the subpoena will destroy the evidence or will withhold the evidence. But there was no such serious claim.
Well, no,
in the
Giuliani
case.
No, Rudy had had all this stuff for a couple of years, most of it, or at least
and
a year, and he hadn't done anything with it. I mean, if he was going to destroy it, wouldn't he have already done that?
Yeah, not only that, he offered it. He took a plane to Pittsburgh with his lawyer with the material, offering to sit down and to give it to people. And the government said no. And instead, they sought a search warrant, and they got it. And for me, it's disappointing because I think the world of Merrick Garland, and I have high regard for the judge who issued the search warrant. But they were wrong. They were wrong about what the Fourth Amendment really intended. And the Fourth Amendment intended that warrants, search warrants, be given only in cases where a subpoena would not suffice. And here, a subpoena would have done just as well, and it would have protected the interests, forget about Giuliani, but of his own clients. And by the way, he had more clients than just President Trump. He had lots of other clients whose material was seized. But imagine it in the context of a priest. Imagine it in the context of your doctor, your psychiatrist. People are just not going to trust privileged communications anymore if the government can take that. Or let me give you an example that's right up your alley. You're a journalist. Let's assume I call you with a big tip and you promise me confidentiality. And then the government searches you and gets the fact that I gave the tip and they read it.
Oh,
that
wow.
That violates clearly the statute. You'd think that journalists and lawyers and others would be up in arms about this decision, but they're not, because it involves Rudy Giuliani, it involves Donald Trump, not the two most popular men among liberal circles, so we're not seeing a lot of support.
Okay, Alan, I know that you're selling the book, The Case Against the New Censorship, but not good enough. I want people to buy two of your books, so let me ask one last question on the latest attack. Cancel culture, the latest attack on free speech and due process. Answer this. What happened to due process? I'm serious. How did lynch mobs replace courtrooms? Because it seems like people just want to shout down anyone who might rule against them.
Well, it's getting worse. I mean, the trial of Chauvin, I have no brief for Chauvin. What he did, the knee on the neck, keeping it on there while he was unconscious, is horrible.
I agree.
Horrible. But he didn't get a fair trial. And that jury was terrified that if they came to a verdict other than murder, there would be violence in the streets. Their own homes would be attacked. Their business would be attacked. Their children would be attacked. You can't have a fair trial when jurors are worried for their own safety. The thumb of the crowd was on the scale of justice in that case. And the people on the left, people on both extremes, don't care about due process. They care about results. They know the truth. If a woman accuses a man, of course the woman's telling the truth. If a policeman shoots a black person, of course he's guilty. Why do we need debate? What do we need due process? It's all part of the same issue. Due process and free speech are falling by the wayside as extremists think they know the truth and they don't have to tolerate any kind of cumbersome mechanisms like due process or dissent that get in the way of getting into their truth. They want the truth and they want it now, without anything getting in their way. And that's not what the Constitution of the United States contemplates.
You know, Alan, I love how you bring up the extremes, because when you're on the extreme, your agenda means more than the process.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I see that among my friends as well. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I wish I could keep you longer. I cannot. I got to let you go. So can you let people know how they can get Cancel Culture, The Latest Attack on Free Speech, and The Case Against the New Censorship?
You know, Amazon, you press a button, you get the book, you get Kindle, you get it on voice, you get it any way you want it. It's inexpensive, it's short, it's readable. Please read it and act on it. That's the key. Act on it.
Fantastic. Alan Dershowitz, thank you so much.
Thank you. Be well. Bye.
You bet. Okay, folks, up next is Golden Eagle Financial. You think you know what you're doing with retirement? Wrong. You've never done this before, but Al Smith has been guiding people just like you to happy retirements for decades. So call Al at 303-744-1128, or you can find Golden Eagle Financial at klzradio.com.
Before you make any decisions about specific strategies to collect your retirement funds, you need to picture yourself in retirement. Al Smith, founder of Golden Eagle Financial, meets with plenty of people who've never thought about how they will spend their retirement years, so he starts every consultation with an exercise in imagination. You probably have a plan bouncing around in your brain somewhere. Starting a business, traveling overseas, volunteering at your church, going on a mission trip, moving closer to family. Al will help you to envision, after decades of hard work, finally having enough time to do what you want. As you describe your future goals, Al will establish a realistic projection of what you'll need in retirement. Start planning early so most of your retirement income can be tax-free. Fill out the contact form at klzradio.com/money. Advisory services offered through Foundation Investment Advisors, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
John Rush will give you the confidence to grow. Every single one of the businesses coached by John Rush made more money last year, and most of them are either moving into larger facilities or expanding to add new locations, because all of them chose to move forward aggressively rather than letting fear hold them back. John Rush will help you take the emotions out of your decisions, starting with the way you manage your employees. Send him an email now, john@rushtoreason.com.
Follow me around. Go ahead and tell me. That was the last statement Senator Gary Hart made before he dropped out of the presidential race in 1987. By being ever accountable, you are free to do anything you set your mind to. Start your campaign now at klzradio.com/accountable.
Stay up to date with Rush to Reason after the show on Twitter at Rush to Reason and on Facebook.com/Rush to Reason.
And welcome back to Rush Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Andy Pate sitting in for John Rush. And on the line right now, we've got Jason Brodsky, the Middle East analyst and editor for, is it Iran International? Am I correct there?
Yes, perfect. Thank you.
Fantastic. By the way, I got to ask, I've always said Iran. Am I saying it wrong or am I saying it right?
That's perfect pronunciation, yes.
Woohoo! Just so you know, I'm from Wisconsin. And that may be the only word I pronounce right.
But you're spot on. So continue.
Oh well, thank you so much, sir. Hey, I was wondering. I'm just going to get right to it. Did John Kerry really say it? Did he do this? And I'm talking about the 200 Israeli missions. Did he really leak that to Iran that they were coming, or am I just reading kind of internet, you know, gobbledygook? Is that real?
Well, this was part of an audio interview that was leaked to Iran International, and we brought it to the world. It featured an interview with Iran's foreign minister for an internal oral history project for the Iranian presidential office. And it's a three-hour interview that we have that was the Kerry portion of it was only a small portion, but the context and the timing of when John Kerry allegedly said this is unclear, and he has denied it, that he even said it. But we have to understand exactly when this alleged conversation took place. It could have taken place when John Kerry was Secretary of State. And if it did, that raises a lot of questions, because the information that you just mentioned was not in the public space during that time period. But if it was in the public but if it was after John Kerry had been Secretary of State, then the information had already been in the public media for some time in terms of Israeli airstrikes in Syria. So we need to understand the context and the timing, and that's why members of Congress want to find out more information.
Because these were Israeli operations in Syria, am I right?
Yes, yes.
And so all we got to do is know the timing, and right now we do not know the timing. Just
no,
making
we
sure.
Don't know.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. All right. I would like to know your views before we get into the tense encounter in the Persian Gulf that just happened.
Yeah.
What are your views on the Iran deal?
Well, I think that Joe Biden right now, his administration is in Vienna negotiating a return to the JCPOA, but that's concerning because a lot of time has passed since the JCPOA originally came into being in 2015, and the region has changed. The political context have changed.
How so?
Well, because we have the Abraham Accords, where Israel has had normalization agreements with a number of Arab countries, and Iran has increased its malign behavior, and I think that the deal has even when the U.S. was in the nuclear deal, Iran used the funds that came from the sanctions relief that were part of the deal to double down on its malign behavior in the region, like terrorism, meddling, and so on. So I think a U.S. return to the nuclear deal isn't going to solve the core conflict between the United States and Iran, and risks making it worse, in my view.
Well, I think so, too. Honestly, I'm very worried about us going back to that. Hey, before we run on from the Abraham Accords, though, am I calling it right, the Abraham Accords?
You are.
Okay. I thought that those were very promising, and I understand, you know, you got to wait a few years to see if they'll be honored by both sides. I understand how that goes, but it just seems to me that once Donald Trump lost the election and Joe Biden took office, any further expansion of those accords may have died with it. Am I right or wrong?
We haven't seen much momentum on that front, but the Biden administration has publicly pledged to build on them. But the problem is that you need to get your Iran policy right in order to build on them. And so far, going back into the nuclear deal really isn't a recipe for that to happen, because Iran will be empowered as a result of this agreement, and so I think that there's a real risk that the focus will be turning to how to check Iran as opposed to having to how to build on the Abraham Accords. And so that's a real risk, in my opinion.
Yeah, the bottom line, Jason, is how do you keep an eye on Iran? I mean,
right.
It just seems to me that you've got to have such strong, strict measures in any kind of agreement where you can keep an eye on them, but you can also go in very quickly. You can't have them be given a couple weeks' notice that you're going to come and inspect them.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand. I mean, what would you build into an agreement? How would you make the Iran agreement something you could live with?
Well, I think we need a comprehensive view of the Iranian challenge. And what I mean by that, it's not just segregating the nuclear issue from all other areas of concern, because they are all related. Because Iran, if you just focus on the nuclear file, Iran is going to take the relief it gets from the sanctions being lifted and use it to double down on its other problematic activity. We saw it when the U.S. was in the JCPOA, and it's going to happen again. So without that kind of holistic strategy, building in limitations on its ballistic missile program, building in some kind of a mechanism for the international community to crack down on its sponsorship of terrorism, and also, very critically, conditioning access to the international financial markets on treating its own people in a more humane way will be really important. But we are not the United States under the current administration isn't focused on that. They're just focused on reviving a nuclear deal that's years old.
So basically, you would advise trust but verify without the trust part?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. There is no trust with the leading state sponsor of terrorism and a power that takes hostages that was birthed in hostage taking. So I agree.
Okay, bring us up to speed. What happened in the Persian Gulf earlier this month? Because we on the outskirts here, people like me, we hear these reports and we don't know what to trust, what not to trust. What information do you have?
Well, over the course of there have been two fronts that have been happening in terms of maritime activity in the region. The first is that over the course of April, twice last month, Iranian ships from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy harassed U.S. naval forces and U.S. Coast Guard forces in the Persian Gulf, what the U.S. Navy calls unsafe and unprofessional encounters. And why that was important was it was the these two incidents were the first time in a year that Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy vessels had harassed U.S. ships in the region. And so that was very significant, and we have to ask ourselves, well, why did that occur? I think the Iranians are testing Joe Biden as they go back into the nuclear deal negotiations in Vienna. So that's what's happening on that front. And then there's another part of the maritime activity that I mentioned, and that is Israeli encounters with Iran.
Yeah.
Israel has been launching operations against Iranian smuggling of oil and arms to its terror proxies and partners throughout the region, and it does that through oil tankers and through a variety of other vessels that go through the region. And recently there was an incident with Israel launching an operation against what's known as the mothership, an intelligence station, basically, that's in the Red Sea, that's in the form of a ship that's used to coordinate and provide intelligence to the Houthis, Iran's Houthi terror proxies in Yemen.
Just a sec. Now, are you saying that the information is relayed through this ship, or that a lot of it is actually compiled there? What are you saying?
The ship is used for command and control, and it's used for intelligence to provide intelligence for some of the Houthi operations in the Red Sea, mining when it mines in the Red Sea and those kinds of activities.
Okay, basically, it's super important. Continue, mm-hmm. sir.
So these are all very dangerous situations that are going on right now, and they're not gonna go away just because the U.S. reenters the nuclear deal. In fact, we saw when the nuclear deal was initially concluded in 2015, we still had these kinds of incidents. So that's why I'm saying that a more holistic, comprehensive approach to the Iranian issue is needed, and focusing solely on the nuclear part is not the best strategy.
All right, Jason Brodsky. Jason, how can people hear more of your stuff, read more about what you're saying? Because I got to be honest, it is impossible to soak it in 15 minutes.
It's a lot. Well, Iran International, please check us out, our website. And we provide breaking news and daily updates on an in-depth coverage of what's happening inside Iran and the politics. And it's an important national security matter for Americans to keep track of.
All right, Jason Brodsky, thank you so much. We'll have you back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Take care. All right, folks, up next is Extreme Auto Repair, and they offer something you don't always find in auto repair, transparency. Extreme doesn't just tell you what you need and don't need. They'll walk you through it top to bottom if you want. So give them a call at 303-841-1071, or you can find them at klzradio.com. Always honest, always open, Extreme Auto Repair.
Go with your gut. You know when an estimate from a mechanic doesn't feel right. Maybe they're telling you to fix a bunch of stuff you didn't even know was broken. Maybe their prices seem surprisingly high. The team at Extreme Auto Repair in Parker will give you a second opinion for free, so you know what's reasonable and what's not. They can typically beat the prices of their competitors, but they won't hold it against you if you decide to go back to the first guy. Either way, you have the peace of mind. The team at Extreme Auto Repair wants to keep you safe and keep your vehicle on the road longer, but they never want to pressure you into repairs that you don't really need. So with every estimate, the team at Extreme Auto Repair will give you a priority list showing you all of your recommended maintenance items in order from the most to least important. That way, you decide what you want to take care of now and what can wait until later. Free second opinions at klzradio.com/extreme. Promises kept.
Avoid the pitfalls with Kevin Flesh. Picture this. You're in court before a judge and jury trying to get the at-fault party's insurance company to cover your hospital bills, and the defense attorney pulls out your medical records. Comparing what you said to the police at the scene of your injury to what your doctor transcribed, you've contradicted yourself. You start to get nervous. You don't want to look like an idiot, but you simply don't recall what you said to the police. That was a long time ago. KLZ's personal injury attorney, Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law, prepares you for these kinds of questions so you never need to worry about what to say. Of course, the opposition will always try to call your credibility into question. But with Kevin Flesh, you always know exactly how to respond. Schedule a free consultation now at 303-806-8886. Kevin Flesh of Flesh and Beck Law. Trial tested. Trial ready.
Get your auto body work and mechanical repairs done at the same place. Most people have one shop for auto body work and another for mechanical repairs and maintenance. But Al Sturm and his team at A Good Shop can handle both. Al and Jamie Sturm are constantly looking for new ways to provide better, more convenient service for their customers because they're driven by one simple goal, to help more people. At A Good Shop in North Glen and Commerce City, they do their best to handle everything in-house so you don't need to be relying on the dealers to get your vehicle back. Bring your vehicle into A Good Shop for auto body work, and they'll take care of your struts, brakes, and alignment at the same time. Auto body and mechanical work, all under one roof. Click on the free virtual estimate button now at klzradio.com/collision and mention KLZ in your virtual estimate request for $100 off your repairs. A Good Shop in North Glen and Commerce City. Certified collision repair worth referring.
Networks change, benefits change, prescription plans change, and premium costs go up. So you want an independent broker who will compare plans from many different insurance companies, hunting for the right coverage at the best price for you. Group Insurance Analysts, 303-423-0162.
Putting reason into your afternoon drive. This is John Rush.
And welcome back to Rush Reason, Denver's Afternoon Rush, KLZ 560. Andy Pate filling in for John Rush. And on the line to close us out, it is Jersey Joe. Joe, how are you?
Andy, I'm just fine this wonderful evening, and how are you?
I'm doing well. See, I didn't do the high. Okay. Now, I got to.
Nor did I.
I know. Before we jump into your topics, I want to jump into the question of the day really quick. I'm going to put it to you. Starting in 1885, this was originally marketed to cure hangovers and headaches. Baby aspirin, tonic water, Coca-Cola, Dr. Pepper, or something else. What was it?
I would have to say Coca-Cola, which at the time was being made with cocaine.
You are correct, sir.
Okay.
Now you just take the cocaine. Okay. Right.
By the way, if you watch the History Channel series, The Foods That Made America, you would have learned that on The Foods That Made America.
See,
of course, I knew that before the series, but it's a great series.
You know, I've been totally lapsing on my Foods That Made America watching.
It's a great series. Did you see the men that built America?
No.
Oh,
I'm a bad person.
Talk about capitalism run amok. I mean, Vanderbilt and Ford and Rockefeller. Oh, it's just Carnegie. Incredible series. In fact, they accomplished what they accomplished, you know, at the turn of the century, because they had a monopoly. If they hadn't had monopolies, you know, they accomplished in 20 years what would have taken 50 years had there been half a dozen little companies doing what they did.
Joe, let me ask you something. Because they did a lot of good and they did a lot of bad. Who was more powerful and did more good or bad? Those guys, those barons of that day, or big tech today?
You know, I'd have to say those barons did more good. I mean, they built the U.S. rail network in record time, created steel for skyscrapers, built pipelines to get oil to cities far away. You know, we got rid of gas. We got rid of kerosene lanterns that were setting fires to houses. So on balance, when you look at what they did to improve the quality of life, They brought electricity, which brought refrigeration, which prevented food from spoiling. People were dying of food poisoning, and they were tons and tons of food were going to waste because it would spoil, because it couldn't be kept cold. On balance, they were good for America.
But all of that was fixed by Coca-Cola. At least you could forget about it.
At least you could forget about it.
Exactly. Okay, sir, what do you got? Sorry to interrupt with all that stuff. What do you got for me today?
Well, let's see. Do we want to talk about, I don't know if you already talked about them, the four new gun control bills that are going to be floated in Colorado. You want to talk about them?
No, I have not. Go ahead. What are they again in the basics?
Okay, so there's four laws. One that would bar persons convicted of certain violent misdemeanors from buying a gun for 5 years. Now, under the federal background check law, a misdemeanor doesn't, unless it's a felony, you'll pass a background check. Colorado said, hey, if you had a misdemeanor, we're going to bar you from buying a gun for 5 years.
The range of that, though? What kind of crime?
Oh, you know, if you slapped your girlfriend, that's a violent misdemeanor. Okay, it's not a felony, but if you slapped your girlfriend.
I get slapped a lot. I mean, does that count? If I continuously, strike my wife's hand with my face, am I going to be barred from owning a gun?
You know, I don't know. I'd have to look at what Colorado classified as a violent misdemeanor. I don't have time. We don't have time to look it up. But that's all right. Another one would close what they call a loophole that allows a gun buyer to obtain a weapon from a dealer if the background check has been completed in three days. Remember, about 4 or 5 years ago, the guy in Charleston that shot up the black church.
Right.
They didn't get his background check wasn't completed in the mandated 3 days. So the gun dealer says, we didn't get a denial back yet, and it's been more than 3 days, so here's your gun. Now, it turned out that gun should not have been sold to him because there was something there that would have precluded him, but because of a backlog or an oversight on the part of the FBI, they didn't come across that for 7 days. So Colorado's saying, we want to make it at least a week before you can buy it. Even if we don't get a background check back, you're going to have to wait 7 days.
Okay.
Here's one that's really scary. Now, you're aware that...
Yeah, well, really quick, before you do that, what do you think of the first two? What are your thoughts?
You know...
Violent misdemeanor. Should you be able to get a gun if you've committed a violent misdemeanor?
In the past, I'd have to look at the list of things that are defined as a violent misdemeanor. I don't have enough information to give you an opinion.
Fair enough. What about the second one?
The 3 day. I think it's up to citizens shouldn't suffer the penalty because government can't do its job. I think 3 days is more than enough. I think the one in Charleston, South Carolina, is one out of 40 million gun sales in the past couple of years, or actually it's more like 60 million gun sales. So there was one screw-up in 60 million. I don't think you change the system because of something that happened once out of 60 million transactions.
Agreed.
I don't think it's justification.
Okay, third one.
As you're aware, a few months back, Colorado State judge said to Boulder, nope, your assault weapons ban and your magazine limit ban is illegal.
Which I loved.
Under Colorado law, because under Colorado law, you cannot write gun laws for your city that are more stringent than the state. Gun laws are the sole and exclusive purview of the state of Colorado. There's a bill now in the state that would reverse that and say, cities, go ahead. Our laws are simply the minimum. If you want to have something that's a lot more restrictive, you go right ahead and do that. That's what's being proposed. In which case, if that were to become law, the day after that became law, Boulder would instantly reinstate its weapons ban, its gun registration ban, its magazine capacity, its 10-round magazine. That would happen virtually overnight.
Well, Joe, not only would you have these little fiefdoms across the state denying rights within their borders, right? And they would deny it just to the hilt. But you would also create a confusing patchwork across the state. Geez, right. What county am I in where I'm driving right now?
Right. Under the Boulder law, by the way, if you were on the highway passing through Boulder with your standard capacity 15-round legal Colorado legal magazine in your 9mm pistol, and your car broke down or you had a traffic accident, and but you're on the highway within the city limits of Boulder, you just broke the law because you had a 15-round magazine in the city limits of Boulder, and you could be arrested during that police intervention of the traffic investigation of the traffic. Oh, you have a 15. Oh, and let's say you were had a legal concealed carry permit, and as you're there waiting for the cops to come by, and you say, "By the way, officer, I've got a concealed carry and I got a gun," and he looks at it, you could be arrested because the gun that was legal a half a mile back is no longer legal a half a mile forward. And that's the patchwork you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, and Joe, bottom line is this ridiculous law, and I think we could agree this is a no-go, it's terrible, would basically allow townships to throw away your constitutional rights.
Exactly. They could make you register. I mean, they could make you register a gun. They could make you have to take a course before you bought a gun or own a gun. As you're well aware, by the way, there's a case coming up before the Supreme Court in the fall where a local gun club, with the help of the NRA, is challenging New York City's law that says you can't even put a gun in your car and drive it out of the city. If you're going to visit friends in Pennsylvania or Vermont and you want to go shooting, you cannot even put your gun in your trunk of the car and drive through the city with it. That's how restrictive New York City law is.
Wow. Okay, what's the last one you got? About 45 seconds.
Oh, goodness. Let's see. So this gun buyer, dealer, bar misdemeanors. Okay. Oh, and the other one is about reporting lost or stolen guns, as if that's going to change what happens to the gun after it's been lost or stolen. That would become state law. Right now, I believe that is Littleton. Was it Littleton trying to do that? They would want to make that statewide, that it would be a crime for you not to report within 5 days that, in fact, the gun was lost or stolen, as if that's going to change what the thief does with your gun after it's been stolen from your house.
No, it's not going to change anything. And what are they instantly going to be able to track it? I mean, come on. It's lunacy. All right, Joe, thank you so much, sir. We'll see you next time.
All right, take care, Andy.
Right. You bet. Hey, folks, that'll do it for today. First hour is up next. Tomorrow, I'm joined by Susan Kochevar of the 88 Drive-In. Until then, drive safe, God bless, and thanks for joining us at Rush to Reason, KLZ 560.